Howdy, partner. Welcome to the Cowboy Edition of Rotcast. Now, for all you new listeners, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Rotcast. Me, I'm Rotwang. I honcho this turkey shoot. Now, we like to take a drink now and again, but folks say we are refined in our processes.
Howdy.
That's my saddle pal and best gal. She goes by the moniker Number 11. We do a 9-point wine tasting and give our opinion about how well it drinks. Sometimes we lose our way and circle around the theme of the show with reminiscing about memories. When we get hung up, we might even throw in some trimmings from movies. We call that V-nostalgia. We like a good picture show, so we conjured up a quiz, the chapter and verse quiz. It's part what we've been watching, it's part our DVD collection, and part amateur film school, shot analyses. We take a single chapter from a DVD and describe the goings-on. Maybe you've spied the film we're telling you about before, maybe you ain't. The idea is that you enjoy the genre and description. Maybe you track the film down. Maybe you just wait for the answer to come to you. We give the answer in the next show, along with some more opinion, maybe a fact or two.
Howdy.
Lately, we've been getting the show out in a timely fashion, one each month. We hope to continue this trend so you can set your watch by it. That's about the extent of the show, but don't fence us in. Like the West, we like to think the show is expansive. So on with the show.
Have I ever taken care of a cow? Not a living cow, but dead cow. Chopped meat.
Hamburgers.
Steaks. Dog food.
We had one called Lucky because when he came, there was a shooting star going on because this was at nighttime, so he was lucky. Then another one, Rotwing saw him dancing in the back. Oh, and he was a black steer, so we decided to call him Gregory Hines because he was a black hoofer.
I've ridden a horse, and I actually fell off a horse when I was a kid, got knocked unconscious. I still have the scar, Bride and Western, on the horse.
I've owned several. One, my brother said, was a barrel with four sticks on it. She was Princess.
Have you ever ridden a horse to work?
No, but I have up to the grocery store. 2 miles.
The only good horse is a dead horse, as far as that is concerned.
Well, you can get tired of taking care of horses. I've found them to be too many times. They almost seem to enjoy being scared.
Never owned a cowboy hat. Got a lot of other hats. No cowboy hats.
What about chaps?
I'm not going to answer the question about the chaps. That I'm not going to answer.
A fake city-fied one, but I've worn a real Mexican sombrero.
Have I ever shot a six-shooter? Yes, I have. A .22 revolver. I think it was a six-shooter. I think. Mine is a five-shooter, so...
Well... I have shot an Indian, but it was with my camera. It was a powwow at a social studies conference.
I have shot an Indian before with a camera. American Indian and an Eastern Indian. The American Indians that I shot were at a powwow in Ashland, Virginia. Crozet, actually. There's a little reservation down there. Used to shoot tin cans with BB guns when I was a kid. And I used to be a pretty good shot at the fairs with the little shot the guy in the ass so he'd play the piano.
He had a six shooter. I went to the range with him and shot it.
Really?
It's a big gun. And the first time I shot it, it pulled up and the bullet nicked the top of the roof of the shelter we were in. I wasn't the first one to do that. If you look up there, there's lots of
little...
But I thought, oh, it's embarrassing.
I've eaten around more campfires than I could keep track of.
Yes, I've eaten beans, and I've made them, too. How I make my beans, baked beans, is by getting a couple cans of Bush's baked beans, and then I usually get a can of pinto beans or sometimes a white bean just for different looks. Sometimes kidney, depends. My father puts garbanzo beans in it. We always pick those out. Then you add some, let's see, some brown sugar and some molasses, lots of onions, and then I like, meaty ones. I put lots of bacon, little chunks of bacon, big strips of bacon. Yes, I put a couple strips on top. Then I put sausage in it too. Usually the loose stuff, but sometimes you can use links if you want. Just little pieces of meat, and then I've put ham in. You can also put, if you're like making a pulled pork or have recently made a pulled pork, definitely some pulled pork in it would be great. Then you bake it slowly, 250 for, I don't know, like 4 hours. And they turn out delicious.
Coming up next, the juicy truth with number 11 and Rotwang.
We're recording this evening at the house of M24. She'll be the new voice you hear. Thank you, M24, for having us over. It's a nice summer evening, so we're sitting outside. M24 says that the cicadas in the trees will be an interesting sonic challenge for our microphones.
Given an hour, it's going to be really noisy.
I don't think we've ever recorded outside before. We're pairing Cabernet Sauvignon Stagecoach Vineyard 2007 with s'mores.
The marshmallows are ginormous.
I've never seen marshmallows that big before.
We've been having problems getting our chocolate to melt, and while we try to create the perfect s'more.
Okay, what I would do is you do your marshmallows first.
Mm-hmm.
And get it good and hot, put it on there, and then put the chocolate on top of the marshmallow.
Let's begin the wine cast proper. Number 11, please describe the label.
I can't take you seriously, Rotwang, with white marshmallow goo in your mustache. Well, let's see. The bottle has a crouching cougar on it. He looks like he's ready to pounce. He's all crunched up. It's kind of a golden color, and there's like a scribed palmeri.
Let's start like we always do, with color and clarity.
It's red and I can't see through it.
Isn't it purple, more purple than red?
It's very much a red garnet color.
We always give these 10s usually, okay. So I mean, do you have like some... problem with the color garnet red?
They get a 10.
Okay.
It's a pretty color.
And we haven't seen any sediments.
No.
Floating in it.
Clarity's 10 too?
I think so.
Sure.
Nice. There's body. A bug in it. Does that count as sediment?
No. Nope. I don't think that came with the bottle.
I think you have to have a bug in your wine if you're a cowboy. Or a cowgirl.
Cowboys don't even touch wine.
But they also wouldn't turn down wine. If that's all there was, they would drink the wine.
Imagine a Western movie where the cowboy leans in towards the bartender and says, "Make mine a white Zinfandel."
Put it in a liquor bottle, would you?
M24, read this label.
Delivering a distinct yummy factor for great dining. Does that include s'mores? Well, so how would you describe the body of this?
Cabs usually are pretty big, heavy wines. But this one isn't striking me as
that big. Maybe it's because I've had so much already, but I would say it was medium to heavy body. And then it's a personal preference. I mean, whether that's okay with you. Like,
by the way, that was a coyote.
Really?
No.
Why did I think it could possibly be a coyote? That sounded like a child.
Well, I thought it would go.
You've heard a coyote, though.
I have.
Okay. That's why I trusted you.
That's a urban coyote there for you. So what does the body mean?
Body is very simple. It's like confirmation in judging horses or dogs. How closely does the wine you're drinking fit into the perfect class? Wines come in sizes or strengths. The big reds are the Cabs and the Zinfandels, Shiraz and Malbecs. An example of a medium is a Merlot. An example of a light-bodied red is the Pinot Noir. So when you judge body, you're judging if the size is right for the grape variety. We once reviewed a 100% Shiraz wine that was grown in Maryland. It drank like water. It had very little body. That received low points.
I'd say medium. How do you give that a number? Is it a good medium, you mean? It's like, I don't know. I think it's really a good wine, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Do you? Okay, good. So I'm not wrong.
Is this wine going to get 100?
It should be four times better than any wine we've
ever
had.
It's got a mountain wine on the label. It should get 100.
So what is the score for the body of a Palmieri Cab?
I don't have much to compare it to.
Right. I would give it a 9 or a 10. We might as well give it a 10.
10?
The next category is aroma notes.
I have a really good sense of smell. And this does have sort of like an outdoor autumn-y kind of smell.
The decaying leaves?
A little bit. Okay. You know, like, but the nice part of that?
Mm-hmm.
When it smells good. It has a nice smell, but it's not a very strong smell. I would think you would get more information if it had a stronger smell. It has a little bit of a fruity smell.
We are holding the wine right under our noses, so that should override the mosquito coil.
So an 8 for me.
Okay. I agree with that.
Go ahead and take another drink. What are the taste notes?
Let me see that groovy little gadget. Looks like a sex toy. You could edit that out.
I don't think so. I want more listeners.
I know, I saw it said clean. I was like, where's the fun in that?
It should be noted that M24 is speaking about the Venturi wine aerator.
Now you know it has a different smell when you stick it through that thing.
It should also be noted that M24 noticed a change in aroma once she used the Venturi.
Highfalutin wine tasters are going to have a chart or a graph or an experience that they compare taste to all different kinds of things like chalk.
There's
just tons of them, like, yeah, thing. Cherry to maybe cherries, raspberries. But you can come up with any ones you want to.
Okay.
Some of them even have things that you wouldn't actually want to taste.
I've had a chance now to go out on the web and read what other people have said in their reviews about Palmieri Cabernet. And one suggested a taste note of pencil shavings. I agree with my whole heart. Pencil shavings is the taste I couldn't name. It may come from the French oak barrels this wine is kept in and matured for 2 years.
Have you chewed on a lot of pencils?
I guess I have. French pencils. Delicious.
You like this? It's real smooth, right?
It seems to be.
Yes, that's
is smooth. So would you call this dry?
I would, because there's not a lot of sweetness in
there.
Right,
because because I don't like sweets.
The tannins in this wine are round but not sharp or edgy. That's where the smooth flavor derives. Tannins are the parts of the crushed grape which are not the juice. These are the skin, the stems, the parts that contain the color. This is why red wine has more tannins than white.
It does seem smooth, but like the aftertaste is a little spicy. You know, like you can sort of feel it. So I wouldn't say it would like feel it like how you're describing it, but it doesn't have a very strong flavor, I don't think.
A lot of wine talk you might hear is BS. P people say.
Lavender.
Right.
From the nearby fields. Right.
But researchers have found that humans cannot process more than 4 flavors at once.
I don't know how to describe the flavor.
I don't either.
But it's not a strong flavor.
I like that you use the word spicy because it's operating on my tongue like a spice would.
Yeah.
But it's not a spice I can name, you know?
Right. Like it just leaves a feeling behind more than anything.
I'm actually thinking blackberry.
That's good, number 11. Your palate is fresher. M24 and I are drunk.
I would give the taste like a 7.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too. It's really not off-putting at all.
No. It's pretty good. I mean, I would buy it.
Except that it's $40.
I would accept it as a gift.
What's next? Complexity?
Complexity.
Well, I'd give it kind of low, because if you can't taste any aroma notes or any taste notes...
Maybe a 4 or 5.
We agree that for complexity, it gets a 4. Next, we judge the acid balance. Acid or tartness can improve a wine, saving it from being flat or dead on the tongue. Conversely, it can be too present and burn your throat and have a vinegar effect. It's easy to tell if the acid's too strong, but it does come down to what you like. I like a lot of acid, but if that's the dominant quality, I don't care for that. Number 11 has had too many wines with too much acid.
If I don't start hallucinating, we're okay. Oh, not that kind of acid.
Not that kind of acid.
Sorry.
I didn't notice the acid in this, but it has some tartness. That's perfect.
No, it doesn't seem to be acidy at all.
I think it's got really good balance. I would give it a 10.
I'd give it a 10 for acid.
Now for the alcohol balance. It has an alcohol of 14.6%.
It's disguising the alcohol pretty well. I think it should get a high mark.
I'll give it a 10. I can't taste the alcohol, but I have a nice buzz.
Drink responsibly. Take a designated driver. That's me.
Okay, price. This is going to be the killer for this wine. It's very good, but, I mean, I've had some very good wine at $10 as well.
So we need to score this wine for price. What will we give this Stagecoach Vineyard wine as a price score?
Maybe a 4 or 5.
I couldn't score this any higher than a 5.
Okay, this wine is getting a big whopping 82. Started out strong, and it's just kind of a little pop.
The price is what did it.
So that's too bad for the people at Palmieri.
Yep.
In the immortal words of Gary Cooper.
Yep. We could do this every week. You only do this once a month, though, right?
Editing this show takes a long time, so we could do one wine review a week and I'd still only finish one podcast a month.
Yeah, but you'd have fodder for a while.
Right, right.
Apparently, you can't handle the juicy truth.
Hi, this is M13 and I love Jesus, but I tolerate Rodcast.
Hi, this is K16, and I want you to turn on your radio and listen to the Master's Radio. If there's any time left, you can listen to this turkey. You're listening to Rodcast, the sound of Vino Nostalgia.
For the answer to last chapter and verse, the All Blue episode number 17, here's a clip from the trailer.
The Blue Max, a film big enough to encompass a world war, yet intimate enough to share the dreams, emotions, and personal conflicts of men in battle. Starring George Peppard as Lieutenant Bruno Stoffel, brilliant, brutal, ruthless. His great obsession, the Blue Max. An ounce of metal and silver. But for this man, it was proof that he was equal to all men and greater than most.
2 more kills, you'll have one of those.
A pretty medal, the Blue Max. the only one worth having. People respect it.
The medal or the man?
James Mason as the general, who thought he could use and control him. And Ursula Andress as the general's beautiful wife, a dangerous woman. Each country had its own most coveted award for its heroes. For France, it was the Croix de Guerre. For Britain, the Victoria Cross. For America, the Medal of Honor. For Germany, it was the Blue Max.
I remember seeing this movie when I was a little kid, and we went to the drive-in theater. Since then, I've seen glimpses of it playing on the TV set, but I never sat down and watched it completely until it came to this quiz. I like the movie quite a bit, and I recommend it. It has a real 60s vibe. Not on the surface. The surface is all World War I war movie, but it definitely has a don't trust authority message. One thing it does really well is the subtle way that you start by identifying with George Peppard's character and end up not liking him so much. He's a self-made flying ace rubbing shoulders with pilots recruited from Germany's upper class, and they're prejudiced against him. And you see that they are wrong about him in many instances, but by the end of the film, you realize that Peppard's character, Bruno, is a jackhole. This might not sound like a recommendation, because there's no one in this movie that's a good person. Come to think of it, the last movie in our chapter and verse quiz was a movie with no good people in it, The Sweet Smell of Success. Could this be a trend? Do I have a predilection? Well, maybe. When I was researching movies for the Blue episode, I watched The Blue Angel with Marlene Dietrich. This is a movie from the 1930s, and it's also German and has blue in the title. It also has nobody in it to root for. It sucks. I do not recommend it. It's terrible. Here's the story in a nutshell. The world's worst high school teacher falls in love with a low-class entertainer. It ruins his life, and he regrets it. The end. Only watch this film if you're a huge fan of German expressionist cinema. So, that proves that I don't enjoy every movie where all the characters are no good nicks.
Well, Professor, how do you like me now?
It's interesting, Marlene Dietrich played Frenchie in Destry Rides Again, and then she was also parodied by Madeleine Kahn in Blazing Saddles as Lily von Stupp.
I'm so tired. So very tired.
And now, a word from our sponsor, WriteWells.com. WriteWells.com offers a variety of online writing and editing services for both professional and creative projects. They work with your deadlines at competitive rates. From line edits to consultations for plot development, they will help bring your vision to life. Contact the editor at writewells.liz@gmail.com.
Now it's time for the chapter and verse quiz for this episode. I forgot to write down the title of this chapter, but it's chapter 14, and it's 5 minutes 24 seconds long. This is quite a recent film, and it's not a straight-up cowboy movie, but it borrows enough from that type of movie to fit the category. Those are the only clues I'm giving, and I'm being quite foxy in my description to avoid tipping you off to certain things about this film. Figures form a strange posse as they trudge slowly forward. In the foreground is the lip of a plastic jug. The camera angle changes to far above the scene, a bird's eye view. The figures approach the jug from all sides. They are outside in a sandy plain. There's a cut, and we are now looking from inside the jug to the figures approaching. One figure touches the plastic jug and says, "This is impossible." The camera pivots right, following the crowd who circle the jug. There's a cut, and one strange figure dressed in a raggedy cowboy hat pushes out from behind a group. He asks, "What have we been fighting for?" The camera is now outside the jug again. It follows Raggedy as he walks forward to stand in front of the jug. Another strange figure dressed in a bonnet and a dress confronts him. We will call this character Sheriff Knotts. Although this isn't the comedian Don Knotts, Mr. Knotts begins to blame Raggedy for the situation in a stupidly phrased accusation. There's a cut and a close-up on Raggedy. A new figure with a voice like Mortimer Snurd appears at Raggedy's shoulder. He says he thinks he recognizes Don Knotts as the sheriff who did them a favor earlier. There's a cut back to a close-up of Sheriff Knotts. He places Raggedy under arrest. The camera switches back to Raggedy. Another shorter character steps forward, and now a strange trio of would-be bank robbers are shown together. The short character and Mortimer declare their innocence. They claim that although they tried to rob the bank, they found someone had beaten them to it. A strange female character has her close-up as she asks, if they are innocent, then why were they found in possession of bank property? The smallest robber says they found it in the desert. Old Raggedy starts hitting the smaller robber with a stick. Members of the posse yell to string him up and hang the robbers. One deputy wonders where the contents of the bank has gone and whether it's somewhere lost in the desert. The only woman in the posse suggests it wouldn't be the first time. Another stupid posse member says it's like a puzzle. Finally, one asks the sheriff what they should do now. The sheriff replies he doesn't know, but he intends to solve the mystery and restates that the robbers are in his custody. There's the tolling of a bell and the scene changes to town. We see a shot much like from a Sergio Leone Western. There are broken bottles in the foreground that act like wind chimes. In the distance, on top of a roof, a young man stands lookout. He spots the posse's return. He points and yells, "Here they come!" On the ground, a group of townspeople look away from the boy towards the end of town and start to walk in that direction. We see the posse riders returning in a washed-out haze. A young girl pushes between two taller townspeople. This next group of shots adds up to a pastiche of spaghetti western movies. The riders are dejected, as are their strange mounts. They all move with heads hung low. On the soundtrack, a sad, lonesome tune is being whistled with an echo effect. There's a shot of a woman throwing open her upstairs window to take in the mood of the returning riders. Behind her, a man places a comforting hand on her shoulder when they see the posse's utter defeat. The townspeople stand motionless along the dirt street. As the posse passes, only the heads of the townsfolk turn to follow. There are cuts back and forth from the posse to the people in the street. A single Spanish guitar takes over for the whistling motive. The robbers are shown tied to mounts and being led. The little girl in the crowd asks where the town's sustaining resources are. The only woman in the posse explains they didn't find any. The rest of the nearby townspeople react with bewilderment. The woman and Sheriff Knotts are shown side by side on screen. They look as if they're lost in thought. Then they slowly look at each other. The sheriff straightens his back and lifts his head with determination. He rides down towards the other end of the street alone. One member of the posse asks, "Where is he going?" And another answers, "He's going to see the mayor." There's a discordant guitar strum to emphasize the statement. There's a cut to a low-angle close-up of a strange ball on a golf tee. We hear the swipe of a golf club stroke. There's a cut to a close-up of a fuzzy-faced character in sunglasses. He's wearing a cap, and he's holding a martini glass. He speaks with a foreign accent, and he sounds drunk. Behind him is another golfer, the one who has just hit the ball. And behind that golfer is a party of four or more. The ball falls and bounces in the desert close to a flag pennant, the kind golf courses use to mark distant holes. The sheriff sits in the sun tying on shoes. He breaks a lace and looks down at a pair of muddy boots. He lifts one and draws a finger through the mud on the bottom of the boot. He says, "That's interesting." He pinches the mud and holds it close to his face. A voice makes an apology for forcing the sheriff to change his footwear. The voice belongs to a strange elderly man in a wheelchair. This is the mayor. He goes on to say that the game of golf has certain protocols. The mayor is signing blueprints held out by two men in hard hats. They walk away and the old man throws forward a lever that sets his chair moving towards the camera. He is center frame with two golfers on the left and a barn-like building on the right. He wears a light-colored cowboy hat, and there's a plaid blanket over his lap. Sheriff Knotts throws a golf bag comically around his body and spills the clubs on the ground. He says he also has a protocol, and that the mayor needs to answer some questions. I won't describe the entire exchange during the golf game in the desert. The mayor doesn't seem to be upset by the loss at the bank. The sheriff continues to question the mayor, all the while performing stupid comic sight gags. Finally, the sheriff asks the mayor what he's building in the desert. "The future, Mr. Knotts, the future," says the mayor. This statement and the entire character of the mayor is lifted straight out of another movie, a better movie. This other movie wasn't a Western, it was more like a detective story. Then the mayor gives a long, boring speech about progress. The sheriff is serious for once, but he's been such an idiot so far that it doesn't mean much. He says,
"You seem to forget. I'm the law around these parts."
Then he turns away and walks off, dropping his golf club on the ground. The camera looks up at the seated mayor, center frame. His henchman is visible over his shoulder. The mayor tells his stooge to contact a hired gun. The implication is the gunman will kill the sheriff. The henchman tries to persuade the mayor to reconsider, because the gunman the mayor named kills indiscriminately. The mayor is not moved by this argument. He continues to golf. Okay, that was the chapter. Do you recognize this film? Hear the answer in the next episode, episode 19. The musical bed you're hearing is called Haunted by Kim Schutterle. You can contact us by email. Our address is mail@rotcast.com. You can read the Rotcast blog at www.venostalgia.com. Our Skype name is Call Rotcast. That's CallRotcast. Visit the website to learn more about the wines and link to more content. Listen next time when you will hear...
I wonder where a guy, an everyday Joe like myself, could find a little action.
"I drink," he said, "to the buried that repose around us."
"The only one I think I can deal with is that Growlin' Poe's daughter."
There was beauty, there was wine. All these and security were within. Without was the Red Death.